Well, at least now I have some experience for having a child.
You know, yeah.
You know.
Are we your children?
Oh, practice. You're not my children, but you know, I've built patience.
I'd say twice a week I have a nightmare and I come over and climb in bed with Justin and Ashley.
Exactly.
I sometimes wet the bed when I'm over here. They're very kind about it.
They swaddle me.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
Very nice. Yeah.
We have 13 tickets left for our live show in DC. It has sold extraordinarily well in the 1 week that it has officially been on sale, but we now have counter programming.
What does that mean?
There will be another big event in Washington, D.C. at the same time as our We're Not Wrong recording, May 24th. Tickets available on Eventbrite, Anacostia Arts Center, We're Not Wrong Live, but also in D.C., speaking at the Libertarian Convention, Donald John Trump.
What?
Really?
How does that make any sense?
Happened today. Literally only hours ago.
That guy has the same name as the old president, right?
Yeah.
That's
weird. He's not a weird thing. No, it's for real.
Donald Trump's going to speak the Libertarian National Convention?
Is he going to try and be their nominee too? Is that allowed?
I don't know. I said that it was probably the largest scale act of political cuckoldry that I can remember to have another party's candidate hold a rally at your convention.
Yeah.
And not even to debate your nominee. That would make sense because their nominee is not going to
have a nominee.
They will have not have selected them yet. There will be libertarian grievances presented to Donald Trump on Friday night. And they're selling merch with Donald Trump's haircut on it.
The LP is?
What?
The Libertarian Party is selling merch of another candidate's nominee.
Is it possible to be the nominee for two different parties?
I mean, it's happened historically multiple times. William Jennings Bryan was both the Populist Party candidate and the Democratic Party candidate simultaneously. You have New York State does this all the time. New York State has the Republican and Democratic parties. They also have the distinct Conservative Party and Working Families Party. The Forward Party, which granted is not
an actual party.
Big machination.
And a waste of time.
I mean, like, right now.
And money. How do you really feel,
and
Justin?
And money.
I think you need to share your opinions.
Well, I don't think there's anything that I don't think there's any prescription which stops you from being a member of the Libertarian Party and a Democrat or a Republican. I think you can be both simultaneously. I don't think there's any law that stops you. The laws would be like on the voter level, if a state allows open primaries or not, like that's governed in terms of the primaries. I don't know. I think the Libertarians can pick whoever they want as their nominee, so long as they're constitutionally valid, which Donald Trump is. I don't think that's going to happen, by the way. I think this is probably a publicity stunt on both ends. Having just heard about it, I don't know what the LP's up to, but sounds like my guess is the LP went, we would like to hear from a former president, and this conveys a certain level of gravitas on our festivities by virtue of having a major candidate here.
So their statement was that they have always extended an invitation to the candidates from the Republican and Democratic parties. And this is the first time that anyone has ever taken them up on it. So they made sure to say that they also extended an invitation to Joe Biden. Joe Biden will not talk. That being said, if that is the actual story and it's not something that is coming together because they're having a hard time selling tickets, and this is just a cynical ploy to move more tickets and merch for the Libertarian Conference, then it is very poorly timed, considering the party is under such flux and there is no sense that there is going to be a candidate coming out of this convention that has any kind of name value, while they do have 50 state access, something that is extraordinarily hard to get.
I think if I were running the Libertarian Party, which I don't believe I am, but it's always in a state of flux.
Check your email again.
I'll check my email later.
If you are, we're trying to get credentialed and getting no responses.
I were running the Libertarian Party and Trump or Biden said, I would like to come speak, I would let them come speak. That makes sense to me that they're major figures. They're going to come address it, like in the same.
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
It's your competition.
Yeah. It's your party's time to make a star. It's your party's time to coalesce. Now, theoretically, that's what you're supposed to do. With the libertarians, it's everybody's going to knife each other. And then when they're tired knifing each other, they're going to start knifing each other again.
It's less coalescing and more coagulating. But they will coagulate around a candidate.
But I'm just wondering if that candidate is going to be Donald Trump.
No.
Like, it's kind of genius on Trump's part. Because now he's going to go and speak to people that, I mean, this is not a party that seems to have its shit together. So maybe
it's
going to
be a Trump rally. He will sell more tickets than the Libertarian Party will.
I get why he would do it. I don't get why they would want it.
I would be very, very surprised if he became the candidate, because the Libertarian delegates are already selected. Like, it's not like you just show up and buy a ticket to admission and they're going to do like a straw poll or something like that. It's going to be the delegates. The delegates are very, very, very ideologically intense libertarians. So they're going to have very strong opinions on whatever their pre-existing opinions are. I very much doubt, I suspect that there'd be a decent amount of the libertarians there that just kind of like how much it pisses off the Democrats. Like, they'll enjoy that bit of Donald Trump, but I don't see them liking Donald Trump as a candidate. Or like, there'll be like two people that might do that as a kind of trollish move, but I do not think he will become the Libertarian candidate. I will bet a lot of money on this.
Which is fine, but it's still, they're opening the potential for him to walk into their convention and like take.
He will be the most popular speaker at their convention.
It's
there's
so
no question
weird.
About that. I don't care
it's
who
weird,
else. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like my guess is from their perspective, like this is this is a presidential candidate establishing that the Libertarian Party is a big enough thing to visit that it's a real thing. It has a certain level of credentials and public attention.
That's so pathetic.
It's so sad.
It is. To me, it's there's three parties that have 50 state ballot access.
Yeah. Like, you could be the actual competition to Trump and Biden.
Well, they should. I mean, like, otherwise, why are they there?
I know.
Otherwise, get. You know, be a Republican.
Yeah. Well,
that's always an option.
I do not have the same reaction you all have on the LP side of it. I am curious on the Trump side of it. What is he getting out of this? Is he trying to mollify libertarians that might be voting for him third party? Like, he's trying to squelch a potential spoiler effect.
It actually, I think, has a lot to do with RFK. So RFK has, over the last few months of polling, begun to show that as Democrats have poured a lot of attention in turning him off to their voters, that the RFK voters that are actually still there are Republicans. They are more free-thinky Republicans. And so in that case, the Republican Party, the Trump campaign, has focused a lot more on third parties than they were before, when they were kind of tacitly sort of fanning the RFK flames. Trump has gone after RFK specifically in a couple emails over the last few weeks. And so my guess is that they're like, all right, well, if we're thinking about third parties, it's RFK. And then the only other thing on our side of the ledger that could actually do any kind of damage would be the Libertarian Party. At least that's the case historically. So why don't we just cuck them at their own conference? I'll go in there. Everybody will cheer and yell, and anybody who comes up after me will look like small potatoes.
I think it's brilliant. From Trump's perspective, I think it's a brilliant move. I just can't believe it's being allowed.
I called it a cuckoldry. Some people on Twitter pushed back and said this is a thing that they've done every year. So it is a dog that caught the car. They can't be the principled stance of, we always invite everybody, nobody comes to talk to us, and that's why we're going to make them hear us. They can't do that if somebody actually accepts. And so maybe open cuckoldry is a step too far, but it still will be somebody else coming in and having his way with their audience. That will almost assuredly be mostly Trump's audience. Because again, he will sell more tickets than the Libertarian Party for this event on Friday, which no one should go to.
No.
Because you should be going to our show.
Yeah.
May 24th, Anacostia Arts Center. Tickets available now on Eventbrite.
Donald Trump is not going to hang out with you after his show.
No,
we will.
Yeah. I'm getting out. I'm getting right out. Yeah. Don't want to speak to you.
Do we know any further? It's not a debate.
No. Nope.
Like, is it going to be a conversation? Are they going to have like an LP official like talk to him?
According
is he
to
just doing a campaign rally at the LP?
According to, well, I don't care if they said that it was going to be him running the Tough Mudder race on stage, like it would become a campaign rally. Oh, that would be something. The official verbiage that went out today from the Libertarian Party was that he will be presented with grievances, with libertarian grievances.
All right.
That sounds on brand.
I'm liking this. This sounds fun.
Which I really hope he gets the should there be driver's licenses. The famous should there be driver's licenses. I mean, I guess the other side of this that would be a downside for Trump is he gets booed out of the building. Because many, if not most, if not all libertarian candidates at some point during the process will be booed by a large percentage of the audience.
You're talking about a very, very ideological group of people that are much more concerned about intellectual purity than the average voter and the average libertarian voter at that, because they're delegates. So you're talking about a situation where you have maybe eight people that are all super libertarians. And seven of them will be booed for being insufficiently libertarian at some point. So when Trump goes up there, I think there's a very distinct possibility that it will just be constant. Like, that could very well be a shit show of just total hackling.
That's assuming
like the Libertarian Party becomes Waldorf and Statler to the Trump rally.
That is assuming that there will be more libertarians than Trump people. And in the email that they sent out, it was very clear they were looking for new people to, go to this convention. They were looking to sell tickets. They made a big point in their email, buy tickets now, make sure you buy tickets. We're less than a month away, buy tickets. And if that's the case and they don't have a lot of registrants, then they're going to get a lot of registrants if it means seeing Donald Trump speak. And if that's the case, then there's just going to be it's going to be four more years chance. It's going to be build the wall chance. It's going to be stuff like that.
At least on Friday. But the convention goes on Saturday, Sunday. Like, that's where the decisions are made. I'm actually curious to see what happens after. Have you heard back from these fuckers about us getting credentialed?
I haven't applied.
Oh, I did.
Mostly because I assumed that the only way to really be credentialed for the Libertarian Convention is to walk in without a pass.
Go in with a handwritten note that says, I can do what I want.
Yeah, exactly. Just saying, like, you're not my fucking dad.
You've passed.
Right this way, sir.
You're now a delegate. Thank you. Congratulations. Yeah,
right to the front.
Well, I don't have the balls that you two have. I would prefer to be credentialed, but I haven't heard anything.
I'll be applying for that later today or tomorrow. I've not applied yet either, but will.
Although I don't know whether or not it benefits or punishes me for calling them cuckolds and replying the Libertarian Party on Twitter and saying that they're cuckolds.
Well, I've been nice to libertarians, and so credential me because I
see that's the thing that you don't understand. I'm speaking their language, being mean and
I know they're mean
totally,
to me
and super aggressive. They're like, oh, I know what this guy is.
Yeah, they're mean to me, but I still want to go. Watch their shit show in person.
I do want to go as well. I do want to go. Not as bad as we will be performing for our first ever DC live show.
This will be fun.
I suspect that we're going to sell out
today.
Hey, you know what? Maybe a bunch of people. Oh, never mind. I'll drop. Keep going. My half-formed brain slipped. Go.
Bye-bye.
Austin, Texas. I'm Justin Robert Young.
I'm Andrew Heaton.
I'm Jen Briney.
And we're not wrong on this edition of the program. We will be talking about the death of the one person motion to vacate, ? As well as our second segment. Hey, Heaton, have you ever done the second segment on We're Not Wrong?
Have I ever done the second segment on Yes.
Have you ever done the second segment of We're Not Wrong on weed?
I have not. I don't think so. Did you drug me?
No.
Can you drug me?
But that is a line from Half Baked, and we are going to be talking about weed.
But we could also do what you just said. That could be fun.
Right now?
No, because yeah. I'm going to grab edibles. I'll just get you.
That would actually.
You two are very
right
welcome
time.
To do it. I wish I liked pot. It just makes me jittery and like, it's like I've had too much coffee. I start to get nervous and check my email. No.
Heaton is nervous about weed itself, but I'm sure very, very thrilled to talk about the legal rescheduling of weed from a Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 narcotic. And that is what we will be going over then, as well as your emails. But first, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene and Representative Thomas Massie announced this morning, as we record this on Wednesday, that they will push forward with a motion to vacate on Speaker Mike Johnson. Greene, a staunch Georgia conservative, took to X to state her intentions on Monday, suggesting that Democrats and some Republicans would have the opportunity to reelect Johnson. The pronouncement came amidst expectations within the House that Greene would initiate her move during Tuesday's afternoon vote series. However, she didn't. She then conferred extensively with Majority Leader Steve Scalise and Representative Thomas Massie, both who also don't like Johnson. Greene did not formally introduce the motion, but then announced that she would Wednesday morning. The potential for this motion to succeed is minimal, as Democratic leaders have already expressed their intention to support Johnson, this in writing on Tuesday, crucially aiding him against the slim two-vote margin he currently holds. Greene's effort to rally support during the previous week's recess did not sway enough Republicans. And so I ask you, Jen Briney, is the era of the lone wolf motion to vacate already over?
Now, this Congress is pure chaos. So I'm not going to say officially that it's over. I do think the fact that the lone wolf is a Miss Marjorie Taylor Greene is a part of this. I think what we are witnessing is Congress in general just getting sick of her antics. I think this is a part of it. But that whole scene didn't look good. Like when they fired McCarthy, that didn't look good for Congress in general, including the Democrats. I mean, we talked about it on this show. I was especially pissed at the Democrats for
siding with Matt Gaetz's crazies.
Yeah.
Marjorie Taylor Greene was on the other side of that one, for the record. She was supporting McCarthy.
Yeah. But she's just such a, like, the attention that she commands. She's a lot. So I do think that the Democrats, I do think that we're seeing something that I'm actually thinking is a good thing, because what I was really angry about the first time was that the Democrats decided to side with the chaos agents. And this time they're saying, like, okay, no more chaos. Speaker Johnson has said what he's going to do. They don't agree with him politically, but at a certain point you have to put the institution above your politics. And so could they go along with Marjorie Taylor Greene and throw the Republicans into chaos again? Sure. But it doesn't look good for anyone. And we're at a point, like, there's a serious business that has to be done. So I think this is a good thing. The motion to vacate, I don't know if they're going to change the rules to stop this, but the only reason that Kevin McCarthy thing happened is that it was in cooperation with the Democrats that happened in the first place. If there were,
because the Democrats got butthurt that he wasn't nice enough on Face the Nation.
Well, you know, I actually watched something this morning and I think I now know something more specific about why they did that. They are still pissed that Kevin McCarthy worked out a budget deal with Biden and didn't hold to it. So I think that was the reason that they were so personally butthurt. And it isn't good to, like, have a deal and then go back on it. So I understand their point. But at some point, they have to put the institution above their party. And I think what we're starting to witness, which I think is the sane path, is that people want to get stuff done and people who want the House to function, even if they don't agree with what, you know, the policies that are going forward. At a certain point, the sane people outnumber the crazies. And so it is important for them to come together in their vast numbers and say, like, okay, enough of this shit. So, you know, Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene are vastly outnumbered by the other people that want the House to function. And I think we're witnessing a needed course correction, and I'm happy to see it.
So Jen is a staunch Johnson supporter. I congratulate you.
There we go.
Officially endorsed as
Speaker. Stan Jen Briney.
Yeah, that's totally what I just said.
Okay. Can you guys help me out a little bit on more of the background on this? Marjorie Taylor Greene wanted to initially vacate Johnson. Why specifically? This was over votes in Ukraine.
Funding.
Okay. So, yeah. And that was just because he let it happen, or was this like the procedural mechanisms?
It's hard to decide when you want to start the timeline of who did the bad thing when. I personally like to start it with two key facts in mind, which is they eliminated Kevin McCarthy and then had no idea who was going to be the next speaker. So they spent a month trying to figure out who had less than five enemies, found out everybody in the Republican conference is hated by at least five people, except for this one dude from Louisiana. And so the quiet Ned Flanders Christian just, you know, goes, gets Hudsucker proxied from the backbench to the Speaker of the House. And he gets eventually a margin of one person, one a friend of mine who covers Congress for the Wall Street Journal, Katie Stetch, did a whole thing about people who are still doing skydiving and bungee jumping on the in the Republican conference, even though literally one accidental death might cost them the entire chamber because it is who's there on that day. So he has no majority. And now as we go forward, he becomes more. I don't think he ever really ventured away from Ukraine funding, but he realizes the majority of his party wants to approve Ukraine funding. The vast majority of the Democratic Party wanted to do Ukraine funding. It was a vocal minority. And so with a one vote margin, he did what needed to be done amongst the loud protestations of the House Freedom Caucus and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's technically not a part of the House Freedom Caucus because she either got kicked out or left. Hold another Wikipedia entry. But so there are some people who are very, very mad at him for that. I think there are others, including the House Freedom Caucus, who are like, all right, we did our best. We yelled and screamed. We stomped our feet. We, you know, made a video go viral of people waving the Ukrainian flag. Let's move on. We have things to do going forward. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is left holding the bag because she was very loud about how she was going to institute a motion to vacate and then didn't throughout that entire process. And now I think she feels she needs to, because otherwise she's all bark and no bite.
Mm.
But I mean, again, like the motion to vacate doesn't matter if it doesn't actually work. So you can put the motion to vacate, they can take care of that in a matter of minutes and be like, yeah, we're not doing this. Like, we're moving on. So I'm really enjoying seeing the extremists being put into the corner where they belong. I think the beginning of this Congress, they were being catered to, and I'm glad to see that that's ending.
The thing that I hate, I don't like this because I don't temperamentally like the people in the Freedom Caucus. They rub me the wrong way. The Matt Gaetzes of the world. But I do think they occasionally have some procedural insights on how the House is
running. Oh, Tom Massey does for sure.
Yeah, and I like Tom Massey.
I do too.
And so it's a situation where, like, and I like Tom Massey, by the way, when I say Freedom Caucus, separate Tom Massey from my, like, I don't like Matt Gaetz personally. But
I like to party with him. He seems like a dude who knows.
He was a very Justin and I, when we were covering the New Hampshire primary.
We saw him speak.
We're maybe like 5 feet away from Matt Gaetz. He's a very dynamic speaker. He's a very engaging guy. And I like on my end, I think me and a lot of other suburbanite middle-class people like put a little bit too much emphasis on temperament and rhetoric at times. So I'm aware that I've got that foible. Anyway, this is all a roundabout way of saying I sometimes think that the crazies of the Freedom Caucus have a point in terms of the procedural mechanisms. I think that the House is broken it's broken. I mean, look at the outcome of everything. Like we're looking at an institution that somehow has a ton of power and money and does nothing. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of problems with it. And fixing that plumbing might come from the crazies occasionally. In the case of the vacating the motion vacating the motion with Marjorie Taylor Greene and all that, I would look at it in terms of what is the impact on this. If the impact is going to be that nothing changes in terms of the procedural mechanisms with the speaker and the funding that they have a problem with is going to go forward anyway, then at that point you're doing it for publicity or you're doing it for something self-serving.
To show that you're not one of these weak-willed uniparty pigs, that you're the real America. And mm-hmm. that's what essentially this is.
Yeah. So if it's just a publicity stunt, then I don't have much traction with it. I can be sympathetic to if somebody was truly, truly, truly worried about the Ukrainian funding and was saying like this is a proxy war, it's escalating towards nuclear war, like it is worth me shutting down Congress in order to try to avoid nuclear war. I can understand the logic and I can understand the intentionality behind that. The stuff that more presses on me is just when Johnson was elected and McCarthy was kicked out, the kind of things that the Freedom Caucus was advocating for in terms of the speaker's relationship with the House, I thought were generally good reforms that they had in mind. And I could kind of see forcing a hand there because I don't think that people in power in Congress tend to be cajoled based on this is good for the body politic. You should give up some of your power. I don't see that happening a lot.
Yeah.
So if there's actually an efficacious reform that's going to come out of it, go for it. But it does not sound like that is the case based on everything you're telling me.
So I like the reform aspect of this, but there's better ways to go about it. It reminds me that for about 4 years, because I know Pelosi was in charge at the time. So about 4 years, there was a committee that had been formed. It was the committee, I believe it was for the modernization of Congress, if I remember the name correctly. But they came up with over, I think it was like 200 recommendations from people who are inside Congress that think that this is how they can get the Congress to function better. It was Democrats and Republicans. They all were the nerds, which is why I think I have some faith in the committee, because it wasn't the showboats, you know, like Marjorie Taylor Greene wasn't there. I want to say it was Kilder. I don't know. I can't remember his name that was in charge of it. But there are these 200 recommendations that are just sitting there waiting to be implemented. And I feel like that's a better way to change Congress than to have these people get outsized power to really just cause chaos. And I think the most disturbing thing about watching all of this for me has been the media's reaction to it, as if like bipartisanship is just so strange and this is not normal. And like, you know, the fact that the war funding was passed with bipartisan like overwhelming support, and that now the two parties are going to keep the Speaker of the House, who is the Speaker of the House, by the way, not the Speaker of the most popular party. The reaction to it just being like, well, this is just crazy. And I'm sitting here going like, this is actually what I've been looking for the last 10 years. I'm finally seeing people working on, and like, obviously some of the policies that they're doing, I detest, but when I'm looking at the institution functioning, this is one of the first things that has made me feel like maybe the ship is going to course correct even a little bit, even in this crazy Congress, that finally the majority is going like, okay, enough.
Well,
I like that part.
The biggest thing for me is that we have seen in an era of declining institutions, and this is not just government, but government's certainly a big example of it. It's very, very fun to lead a revolution. Mm. It's very fun to depose the old autocrat. Mm-hmm. It's significantly less fun to actually run the kingdom. And that's the reason why revolutionaries usually wind up getting killed shortly after they depose the former regime. And so you've seen a situation where, all right, so Matt Gaetz comes in. This is definitely not about this ethics investigation into me, a 17-year-old. This is principled. This is about we're skidding off the financial cliff, and I'm not going to be the one to say taking our foot off the brake a little, or foot off the gas a little bit, is going to be enough. We need real reforms. Cool. So are you going to do anything about Social Security? Are you going to do anything about Medicaid? Are you going to do anything about the interest that we're paying, or you know, because the discretionary spending is not going to actually stop the problem that we have right now, if what you're talking about is that. So no, they're not. You're going to roll the Russian roulette tumbler a little bit more and see who it lands on. Guess what? It's Mike Johnson. And then nothing really happens. Like, there was no plan.
I do have one question for you. The Gaetz investigation into him and the kid that he was allegedly sleeping with. What happened to that investigation? Did he effectively kill it with that motion to vacate? Because I haven't heard anything about it.
No, it actually made news last week a week and a half ago.
So it's still
there is an investigation, but I think by the time that anything happens, he'll probably be out of Congress anyway, because he's going to run for governor of Florida. So
he's not running for the House again?
I don't know if he's running this time, but I don't suspect that he will be there long. He will be out to run for governor of Florida. By all reporting, that is definitely going to happen.
Florida, you sure know how to pick them.
Byron Donalds and Matt Gaetz will essentially be in the Trump primary of who old Donnie Trump is going to bless, but he's off the hook in terms of any kind of criminal probe. It was only it's only the congressional ethics probe that Kevin McCarthy says to anybody that will listen, that's the reason why I lost my speakership, is because Matt Gaetz can't keep it in his pants. And there's some details about it that part of it was him constantly showing pictures of his wild parties that included a naked woman hula hooping. Mm-hmm. That was one of them, that he would just show it to anybody regardless of whether or not they wanted
Justin,
to.
I'm sorry, Justin. I didn't know we lived in North Korea.
Yeah.
I thought we lived in America, where it's perfectly acceptable for me to seduce 17-year-olds as a member of Congress and show naked pictures of women I banged to my colleagues. I don't see what's so bad about that.
So I think the closest that was ever said, and this was like reporting off the record of one of the depositions, was that he told that he had a absolute moron of a friend, like Cohen level, Cohen brothers movie level stupid. He burnt down, he was some official in Central Florida, decided to start a crypto mining rig, ran it so hot he burnt the building down.
Nice.
Like that level of stupid. That was Matt Gaetz's wingman. And apparently during his deposition, he said that Matt Gaetz requested this girl that was 17 at the time, that she should fly in for a party. And so that's where the sex trafficking thing came from, was that there was payment for a girl to come in that he then had sex with. A lot of that relies on the very fuzzy line of, is a sugar baby a prostitute legally?
I don't think so.
Which I don't, I mean, if that's the case, if that's the case, then the entire world of professional athletics are going to be arrested for sex trafficking, because the amount of women who get flown out during road games is legendary. But yeah, so that was the closest that anybody got, aside from the fact that Matt Gaetz, a fairly loud and proud poonhound during his single days before he married his lovely wife, Ginger.
Oh, he's married?
Oh, her no, as soon as that broke, the tried and true way to get out of a sex scandal, immediately get married.
Nice.
Because that was when I was single.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was when I was single.
Out
married.
Of curiosity, I'm assuming that the age of consent law in Florida is 17. And so there's
18. No, there's no proof that they had sex.
Got it. So theoretically, if there was, that would be illegal. It would be a minor, like, because it varies from state to state, jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
That they had sex and she said that he knew. I don't know the exact letter of the law on it.
Okay.
But as far as I know, the closest that anybody could get to anything was he texted this dipshit friend of his and said, bring Sally, not a real name, like bring Sally. And then the dipshit friend paid Sally and her two friends like with Venmo transactions that were like for school, wink, wink.
You know, that was dumb. But you know what? Like, I like making fun of Matt Gaetz. I really enjoy it. I get a kick out of this whole story. I just think it's funny. But really, like, 17 is a little different than like a 9-year-old. So the kind of like, oh, he's a cutie fucker thing. Like,
you're
it's not
pedophilic, but no. you are violating the law. Like, you're.
Yeah.
But biologically, the person's an adult. You're not child diddling, but you are violating the law. And there's reasons that we have.
It seems like everybody that was at Matt Gaetz party was a very willing participant.
Exactly.
They were not recruiting off the street for it.
All that being said, I think if I were a poonhound in the Florida state legislature, I'd still have enough discretion to go for, like, I don't know, 20-year-olds. I feel like if that were...
I am curious if he knew the age, though, because how often in like early college did you meet a girl and go like, so can I see your ID? Exactly how old are you? Like, you don't know if there's a senior in high school that's come to this party and looks like a college student, behaves like a college student, is drinking like a college student. Like, you don't actually know the ages of these people. So
he wasn't in college, was he? He was in the state legislature.
No, he was in Congress.
Oh, he was in Congress. Right.
Congress.
Yeah. See, at that point, when you're in Congress, I feel like I would have a greater degree of scrutiny as a member of Congress than a member of Phi Kappa
Gamma. You would, but you're not Matt Gaetz. Mm-hmm. You're Andrew Heaton. You know facts about like old presidents.
I'm more of a poon dachshund. I'm not even, you know, I'm sniffing around, but man, I don't have quite that same level of.
You're small and gentle.
I know. Sure. Yeah. Oh, but fierce if attacked. Fierce. You know, like, look at those dachshunds, you know.
As far as a hound goes, you'd get shot by a Christy gnome.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hunt.
Why is this news lately?
She wrote it in a book. She wrote her, like, I'm a politician about to take the step to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote, like, her book. And in that book, was a story about how she shot her farm, a puppy.
Yeah. Her farm biopic. And that like I've not read it. And but what little I've read, I'm like, why, A, did you do this? B,
how
why
much
did you
does your
this?
Editor hate you?
Yeah.
How much does the editor
I
read?
I wasn't the, I, again, I've not read this. So yeah. I'm taking this out of context snippets that I've read on emails and things. That like she was running a farm. She had a puppy that kept killing chickens. And so they put the puppy down. And I'm like, could you just given it away? Literally was no one around. Like the puppy would like come back over 400 miles just to murder those chickens again. Yeah. Like
all of our dogs would take out a chicken. My idiot dog is 8 pounds and keeps trying to attack a goose.
Wallace,
she will not win this
fucked
fight.
Up a turtle yesterday. There was so much blood. Oh, Jesus God. Christ. So the last 3 weeks, Wallace has been like, it's turtle season. I don't know what the hell's happening. When I moved into my home 3 or 4 years ago now, a turtle would show up at my front door every couple of weeks. And I'd be like, I don't know what you want. Why are you here? Like, did the last owner like let turtles wander through his house? I don't know. This turtle kept showing up. Recently, Wallace sees turtles. And what I thought was going on in his head was pervert rock. Rocks aren't supposed to walk. You're a pervert rock. Stop walking, rock. And he'd bark at it. And then he'd pick it up and he'd run around and I'd be like, put it down. Cause I was afraid that the turtle would like eventually get angry and like bite him. And I'd have a turtle. Like, I don't know how this works. So I'd be like, put down the pervert rock, Wallace. And I'd make him put it down and he'd get really angry at me. Anyway, yesterday I go outside and I have a rug on my back porch. It is just covered in blood. And I was like,
oh my God.
Oh my. And I first thought was, oh no, Wallace lacerated himself. And then I was like, sure is a lot of turtle shell bits laying around on my back porch. And so I tried to hose it down. The blood came out. The turtle bile is apparently very sticky. Oh, whatever part of a turtle is yellow is very, very sticky. So I hosed it all down and I was like, you know, for having chunks of turtle all over my porch, it's still not a full shell. And then I was like, well, where the hell is the shell?
Oh God.
So I'm like, did Wallace like wound a turtle and it limped? Is there going to be like a turtle with an eye patch and a peg leg coming back for vengeance here? I don't know. There's a lot of questions that have been brought up by this whole turtle episode.
Well, now you're never going to be Trump's VP.
Yeah.
Putting that out into the ether.
I hate that story.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. And Wallace, like, been watching Wallace to be like, does he get salmonella? And, you know, he poops his body weight every day. And I keep waiting for like weird things to come out now. So
well, I mean, obviously the only solution to this problem is you have to
shoot
him.
That's right. Exactly.
You got
to
shoot him.
I got to drive to North Dakota and then shoot him at a farm.
Yeah. That's clearly the rational thing to do in this instance.
I can't imagine how that story is something that you want to put into a book.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. It's not that she said it. If she said it at a campaign stop, you know, whatever. That's one thing. That's a slip of the tongue. If it made it into her stump speech, you'd have a dumb speech writer. Like there are reasons.
You could see her saying it to like farm people. Like I had to
no,
do
but
a
apparently
tough thing.
That was
like,
that was the other thing was that the people that really got her were like MAGA rural hardcores that were like, whoa, like a puppy? Mm. Like if the puppy's killing chickens and it's not really good at hunting, number one, it might be just a wild puppy. You give it to your kids.
Yeah.
You don't take
it
out.
Build a
hunting.
Bigger fence between the puppy and the chickens.
Yeah. There was a lot of pushback from like the very aggravatable right. They turned on her immediately.
Did anyone like this story?
I think there are some gnome heads who were probably,
I could see some people like, so in my lifetime growing up in Oklahoma, in my family dog, when I was a kid, dogs lived outside. Dogs were not family members. They were pets. There was an ontological distinction. Now my dog wears a necktie and sleeps either in my bed or in a bed next to me when he's not covered in turtle guts. And I should have got my dog health insurance. Like I'm going to take him to piano lessons. Fucking all of my parental instincts are being funneled into my dog. And my parents have moved that direction too. We're like growing up, we had a doghouse. My daily chore was corralling my beagle and putting her in the doghouse, which took about 45 minutes an evening because she didn't want to be in there. And now like they, like their chocolate lab lives in their bedroom with them and lives in the house and like, I don't know, has a retainer or something. And but I'll say like when I visit my family in Alva, they definitely have more of that dogs are dogs, dogs are not children vibe. I don't think they would shoot a dog if it killed a chicken. I don't think they might have 50 years ago, but I don't think they would today. But there is like, my dog is my kid. That is a much more modern suburban attitude than traditional rural stuff. That being said, I would be very hard pressed to shoot a dog. I can think of some scenarios, but they would be few and far between.
If you want deep, deep Republican lore. So Kristi Noem identified Ron DeSantis as a potential threat, like during COVID, during like lockdowns. So she criticized Ron DeSantis early, criticized him through the primary, criticized him after he left, ostensibly to get closer to Trump. Ron DeSantis, the day that this story breaks, puts a video out on his Twitter with an adorable little puppy playing in the yard with his kid and says, "Hey, this dog was rescued from the border. We really want to get him adopted here in the state of Florida." Immediately gets the puppy adopted. But I thought a well-played troll by DeSantis.
Who's the like super Southern congressman that has a fat bulldog named Baby Dog?
Jim Justice.
I saw a video with him the other day. And he's just so happy. Well, Baby Dog likes Thursdays. And you're like, what is he? He's just like got this
America,
fat dog with him.
America is not ready for a Republican senator from West Virginia who brings his dump truck fucking dog everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. Everywhere he goes.
You know who else has discovered the puppy love is Dave Portnoy of Barstool. Have you seen him in Miss Peaches?
No. Talk about somebody who needed an image softening.
He did, man. Man, he getting it with Miss Peaches. He loves Miss Peaches. She's a pit bull.
The stuff that leaked out about him made Matt Gaetz look polite.
Well, I mean, at least Barstool Sports guy. What do you expect?
I'm on your side. It's like when people get mad because a UFC fighter disagrees with them politically. It's like they get punched in the head for a living. Like, please. Yeah, like what do we want? They're not. If that upsets you, you are upsettable. You need to shut up. Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's just like he loves Miss Peaches. I'm really enjoying his relationship with Miss Peaches. Miss Peaches, I think she made it into Coachella. There was some DJ that was putting pictures of dogs up there, and he like incorporated Dave Portnoy's TikTok with him being like, "Oh, Miss Peaches, you're taking a bath." Like, put it into the song. It was great. It's softening him up quite nicely.
Yeah.
After his
I'll bring Wallace to our live show. He'll be in DC with me.
Why is Wallace coming to DC?
He's running. He's announcing.
I'm going to DC for multiple reasons. But the reason I'm there for a long period rather than just flying in and out is reasons like, hey, we would love for you to come be here for like 2 or 3 weeks where we could work on a bunch of projects. And I was like, I feel really like I'm already gone. I'm going to be gone for the conventions. I'll be in Scotland for a little bit this summer, presumably. I feel bad about leaving my dog so often. And they're like, bring your dog. You stay with Austin. We'll give you permission to bring him into the office. And I was like, okay. So I'm going to drive my camper and my dog out there. So he'll be with me. This is for Wallace, for my emotionally codependent dog that wears a necktie. So he gets to stick with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I will draw. If we do this, I will drug him up and I will have a designated kennel master. Who's in charge? Like, I'll have somebody just sit on the side. Like, I'll get him a blazer.
We're going to have our live show and you're just going to hear in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if an ambulance goes by, we're in trouble.
Wallace pines for Heaton when Heaton is not paying attention to him, like an orca. Yeah. Like it is just this bellowing whale sound that is just Heaton, please come pay attention to me.
Yeah.
And I love since the camping trip where your dog had an injury and you discovered drugs. And now anytime you want your dog to chill, we're not going to train him. We're just going to drug the shit out of him.
My dog is he's got a lot of anxiety and you give him a half dose of trazodone, which is well below the threshold that he was prescribed. And he's just happier and he's less freaked out. So,
I can tell the difference.
Wallace moves around like he's the size of your dog, Jen.
Yeah.
Abby.
Like he's tiny.
Abby moves around like she's the size of Wallace. Like Abby will walk around as if she's the biggest dog on the block. And Wallace, when Heaton walks to the bathroom at like the outdoor coffee and beer place, will get on top of the table to see if he can see where Heaton went.
Yeah. Yep.
These are true stories. And that tail of his. It's a very strong tale that powerful he has absolutely no idea he's smacking
you
with.
He's built as if his breed was designed to tug a refrigerator up a hill. Mm-hmm. Oh, fun Wallace update, by the way.
Yeah.
My Latvian war correspondent friend, Christoph, who was staying with me last weekend or 2 weekends ago, he and his wife honeymooned in Texas, and they stayed at my place because, of course, Andrew Heaton is destination number one for a honeymoon couple from the Baltics. So they were staying at my place, and I was like, yeah, just stay at my place. I'm going to stay with my girlfriend. Wallace is going to be at the house. I'm not, because Abby's got a cat. Wallace did. They fell in love with Wallace. And as I was like driving to the airport, Christoph was like, I am friends with Vice President of Latvia. Would you like to interview him? And I was like, maybe. I don't know quite what I'd do, but we got talking, and I mentioned when I was in Scotland the first time, I got some of my buddies in the state legislature to give you're an honorary Oklahoman citations to people in Scotland. And so anyway, this is a long way. It's possible in the next couple of months that Wallace is going to get Latvian citizenship. the government of Latvia will make my dog a Latvian citizen, which I'm really rooting for. I feel like there's not a lot of dogs that have joint citizenship, and my dog might pull it off.
My dog is an EU citizen. She's a resident of Portugal.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's official. So
my bird ain't doing shit. Real underachiever. Dr.
Yeah.
Bird.
Yep.
Not very
cosmopolitan. Yeah.
No.
Although your bird is a doctor, so.
Yes.
There is that.
Yes. Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong is where you can support this show. And you don't just do it for your health. You don't do it for fun. You do it for your own gain. You got a personal interest in this, including a bonus episode each and every week. This week, we're going to be talking about why the Fed can't seem to tame inflation. Head on over there right now. Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong. One more plug. Heaton, you mentioned that you're going to go work with Reason, as you often do. I would encourage everybody to read my friend Andrew Main's new piece in the new issue of Reason, why the AI economy will bring about 0% unemployment. I was a big fan of it. I helped him edit it, and I would encourage everybody to read it. It's for free on the website. You don't need to be a subscriber. So go ahead and do that. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration is set to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, signaling a substantial shift in American drug policy, as confirmed by sources to the Associated Press. The move, still pending review by the White House Office of Management and Budget, would reposition cannabis to Schedule 3, recognizing its medical applications and lower abuse potentials compared to Schedule 1 substances like heroin and LSD. While not legalizing recreational use, the change follows a recommendation following the Health and Human Services Department. Public comments will be sought before the final rule is published, marking the DEA's most significant policy alteration over 5 decades. The adjustment is supported by Attorney General Merrick Garland and stems from President Biden's initiative to reconsider federal marijuana laws, which included pardoning Americans convicted of simple possession. This rescheduling could reduce the operational burdens of the growing marijuana industry, potentially easing research barriers and lessening the tax load on businesses. However, it retains some control over DEA regulators, requiring dispensaries to register like pharmacies, for instance. Critics and proponents will debate the effects as we move along, with some viewing it as a necessary update and others cautioning that weed indeed is still a gateway drug and would create international treaty conflicts.
Gateway to what? Fun?
Carl's Jr., usually. Heaton, is this the end of weed stigma as we have all known it our entire lives?
I think the end of weed stigma already happened.
Yeah.
The government's downwind of culture most of the time. It's downriver of culture. The government, much of the time, is coming around to the position of the people. And the people have already got to the point where they think weed should be legalized. When you look at polling, it's like 80% of Americans think some form of weed should be legal. That ranges from, of course, you should be able to treat it like cigarettes or alcohol or something, to medical purposes, maybe that kind of thing. Broadly speaking, the whole marijuana is a gateway drug that leads to heroin that will kill you, and if you touch it, you'll ruin your life, that I grew up with in the 90s in Oklahoma, that is, I think, gone away. And for great reason, because it's been such a colossal, stupid waste of time and money. Yes. And it's like whenever they do, like every 4 or 5 years, there will be some medical group that will do a blind research test where they'll give a panel of doctors, a just the side effects and symptoms and societal outcomes of various substances. And they'll ask them to say, what would you make legal? What would you regulate? And what would you ban? And every time they ban alcohol, they make marijuana completely illegal, as they do psychedelics. And then
legal,
capital L. They look at it and go, oh, psychedelics don't have any inherently addictive properties, nor do they have it's difficult to die from. Like, you don't overdose. You could get really scared, but you're not gonna overdose the way you can with alcohol. You can absolutely kill yourself with alcohol in one sitting. And then a lot of the stuff they're like
such cases.
Like Tylenol, stuff like that. Maybe not Tylenol, whatever it is. The one that you should not, the headache pill you should not take if you're drinking. Is that Tylenol or is it aspirin? Yeah. I can't remember.
It's ibuprofen, I believe.
I think ibuprofen. So anyway, whatever the one is that has a conflict, that's an aspirin-based one. Aspirin. that one.
Acetaminophen? Maybe are we just it. Saying words?
Anyway, that one, they're like, that one should be prescriptioned. So like when people do blind tests, what they come up with is completely different than what we've done. What we've done for the last 40 years, 50 years is having the Schedule 1, 2, and 3 system that has now changed. And that is momentous, both momentous for several reasons I'll get into. For people that aren't familiar with this, Schedule 1 means there is literally no medical or personal benefit to the drug at all. There is no benefit to it. Schedule 1 includes heroin. Schedule 1 includes LSD. I think the whole scheduling system's stupid, just from top to bottom. There are potential benefits to LSD. Absolutely, it could be abused. We should keep an eye on that. But there are potential antidepressant situations that could help from it. There are potential a palliative relief. There's even some research into dealing with addiction because it might be able to do some neuroplasticity. Marijuana has been treated for the last 40, 50 years legally from a federal perspective as exactly the same as heroin, as having zero medical properties to it and being a complete downside to it. Now it's being rescheduled to Schedule 3, which means that it is it has medical properties, but it has potential for abuse and it should be regulated, which is way, way, way
totally
better.
Totally true.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Again, I think the scheduling system is just it. There's so many outliers at every tier that it strikes the whole thing strikes me as a dumb way to do it. We ought to rethink how we're putting this. That being said, putting it in Schedule 3, great move. Well done, DEA. Well done, Biden administration. This is a good call. This is long in coming. And the effects of this, I think, are going to be culturally not very significant because the culture is already outpacing the government. The people have well exceeded what our leaders are doing. Where it'll affect things is one of the big economic impediments to marijuana the last few years is that if you are a marijuana dispensary or you're growing marijuana, you can't interact with a bank because no bank wants anything to do with you because you're violating federal law. The way marijuana has operated in the United States since Obama, when we started legalizing this on a state-by-state basis, is the federal government turns a blind eye. It is illegal. It is a Schedule I narcotic, and it's been banned not only by American federal law, but by the 1961 Narcotics Treaty. So it's just illegal, but we're gonna pretend that the states can
but
do
at
this.
Any moment.
But at any moment, they could sweep in and do it. It would be like if, I don't know, like Texas just decided like we're not going to enforce speed limits, but they're there. We can. So as a result, nobody in marijuana could do anything with banking. I mean, you have all these situations where marijuana dispensaries have to hire like armored cars to they're keeping their money in safes and they hire armored cars to shuttle the money back and forth. Difficult to get credit lines, difficult to do any type of business across states because then you're getting into federal territory, right? So the fact that this is going from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 means that it is now legal, or it will be legal when this happens, at the federal level for medical marijuana, which is how most states have done it. I don't remember the figures off the top of my – well, hold on. I've got these somewhere. We've got 38 states presently that have medical marijuana. 24 states that have outright legalized it for recreational purposes, but 38 states that have done so for medical purposes, which should no longer be afoul of federal law, which means like Oklahoma, where I'm from, we did it through medical marijuana. Like granted, like some guy in a van drives by and you go, my back hurts. And he goes, yeah, here's a prescription for marijuana. Yeah, like, yeah. That kind of thing. But
I don't have any weed disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked having to get a license for weed. This is not a popular opinion amongst stoners, but
I'm
like,
with you.
I really
in California. They fucked it up with recreational.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But the reason that I liked it is that even though I was experienced with it and I knew it, you know, I kind of knew it was up, I had to sit down with someone who had a medical background who asked me the questions. Do you know what it feels like to smoke this? Do you know the differences when you eat this? Do you understand that when you eat this, it takes 45 minutes? And so if you don't feel anything after that, maybe take more. Do not drive after you take one. Like, gave me the talk. And I felt like that was a really important thing. So I would like to see people have to get a license just once. Like the whole, you have to come back and pay $50 a year. Like that was bullshit. But I do think that if this is something we're going to legalize, I think there needs to be a conversation that is required so that you at least know what you're getting into. Because people that take edibles and then drive and have it hit while they're on the road, it's incredibly dangerous. Because it's not just your perceptions are off, but your mind is different. And like, you know, Andrew, you don't like the paranoia that you get.
No.
If you get that while you're actually doing something that is controlling a 2,000-pound vehicle, like that is a very, very dangerous situation. And it happens pretty frequently. So I liked the licensing system. I'm not actually in favor of full recreational legalization. Although if that's where we go, like we can deal with what I'm saying another way.
I'm less worried about that. I mean, we don't do that for alcohol. And
well, we should do it for alcohol too.
You'd want an alcohol license?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just to have the conversation about like, do you understand the health,
but who is
the
doing,
negatives, the
who are we trusting to have these conversations?
I think it just needs to be a medical professional, just any kind of license.
So you need to go to your doctor and say, I want a license to drink alcohol.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I didn't know a lot of the negative repercussions when I started drinking. It was just a rite of passage. I'm old now. Like drinking is what we do in this culture. Like I didn't realize the effects that it was going to have on me.
But do you think that would have changed anything?
I do. I really do. Because the effects that I didn't understand was the long-term anxiety. So in my Better Than Booze episode on my Patreon, I've talked about this extensively, but it wasn't until I heard Andrew Huberman's podcast about what it does to your brain that I realized that like after drinking, it wasn't just a hangover for a day or two. There was an emotional hangover that was happening for weeks. And so I felt like I was having like problems with depression and anxiety for years and years and years. And then I found when I quit drinking, when I wasn't drinking, my emotions... When I was drinking for 3 weeks after, my stress levels were above my baseline. So I was just constantly above my baseline. It turns out that's a biological thing. And now that I don't drink alcohol, like I obviously still have bouts of depression and like things affect me and like I'm not happy all the time. But I do notice that my baseline is back to where it was when I was a kid. So I feel like for 20 years, I dealt with more stress and anxiety and depression than I would have otherwise had I been aware.
And you think that would have resonated with you when you were a teenager and you had your first drink?
Yeah, I do think it would have.
You were a more prescient teenager than I was.
I've been dealing with these issues for a long time and I didn't see the connection.
I think there's a distinction between information and permission. I'm fine with government giving information or clarifying information. That seems to me to be a good use of government resources. I like that packages have the calories on them. I really like what Cass Sunstein was doing when he was running OIRA, where there were federal regulations that required if you're selling a refrigerator, for example, you have to put the price tag of the refrigerator, but you also have to express the presumed cost of electricity over a five-year period. That way consumers were able to make a choice of this refrigerator is $100 cheaper, but it's cheaper because it's less efficient over a five-year period. That way you can actually do that. I think that's good when the government is helping people to make their own decisions. I would disconnect that from the permissive element of that. I am not a government paternalist. I don't want the government to withhold permission for you to do things with your own body and your own decisions like that. If we could figure out a way to...
Can I pause right there?
Yeah.
With substances like these, especially if they're being paired with driving, this is not something that's just affecting you. These are things that if we're going to permit you to drink alcohol and take edibles, then you need to be aware of the changes in your body composition when you use these, make it harder for you to drive. It's going to affect you in ways that can affect and literally kill other people. So that's why I feel like this isn't as simple as my body, my choice, because with these particular substances, especially if you're driving. So this could be a
part
of
But it's very illegal with very harsh penalties to do that currently, driving under the influence.
Yeah, but I feel like before you get to be influenced to have some kind of requirement that you get this information, I just don't think that
that a part of a driver's license? Because that would be the time in my mind, rather than having a drinking license.
I would imagine that we probably got stuff like that when you got your driver's
license. That's my thought. I'd rather have that be a part of the driver's license process.
I think it probably is currently.
I don't think it was emphasized when I got my driver's license as much as it should have, and weed was definitely a part of it. It wasn't a lesson in what these substances do to your body. And like, if there's people that'll get a driver's license that have no intention of doing a bunch of different drugs. So I'm not sure that like that is, it can be a part of driver's licenses, but if we're talking about the legalization of marijuana and the current, like, we have a problem with alcohol in this country. Tens of thousands of Americans die every year because of alcohol. And I do think that requiring a conversation with a doctor before we say, like, go ahead, you may buy this freely anywhere and anytime you want. I think requiring a one-time, one-on-one conversation to make sure you understand the repercussions of this. I don't think that's paternalism. I think that is making sure our citizens are informed enough to do this in our society, because there are societal
risks. It's a literal nanny state.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I don't hate nannies. Well, there's repercussions for the entire society. Like, there's...
Yes, but we have repercussions if somebody does the worst case scenario that you're pointing out.
Okay, what's the worst case scenario? People dying because people don't have information about these substances? Or you have to get a one-time conversation?
You are presuming that that one-time conversation would change anything.
It would change the level of information that we know every single person that consumes these substances has. It would absolutely make sure that you know.
That we currently don't get when they have to sign up for a driver's license, or when there is a list or a warning on the labels of the items themselves.
If someone doesn't.
It's not like we're not trying to solve this problem now, is my point. So you are saying that we are not solving this problem, which I think you have ample evidence to say, and that now we need more to solve it more.
Well, right now we're talking about the process of legalization and how we should do that with marijuana. Like, right now it is
I'm on your side with medical stuff. I mean, I got cut off when I did the recreational thing. I think that they fucked it up in California. I liked it better the way that it was. It was more expensive. I don't think that, I also think in general, I'm troubled by the culture of super high dose edibles. I think that the way that we think about weed in a very fun, happy-go-lucky kind of way is not the world of weed that exists right now, when you have a lot of people that will take, you know, if the baseline for an edible is 5 to 10 milligrams, people's bodies affect these things in very, very, very different ways. That is a extraordinarily high dose for a lot of Americans, and there's not a lot of education on it. So in the weed side, I totally agree with you.
Let me give you an example of that.
Yeah.
So I was in Nashville this weekend. I did a half marathon. My legs hurt. So I noticed that at the bars that we were going to, most of them, they were selling drinks that had cannabis in them. And so the first day I knew what I was doing. And so I saw one that was just, it had CBD in it, which I know, because I've educated myself, would have no like psychedelic effects, but would probably make my legs feel better. And it did. But it's the second bar that I went to, I noticed that they had some that had it was 5 milligrams CBD and 10 THC. And like,
which the gummies that will get you a lot, isn't it?
That will get you right. That will get you right for a day. Don't fucking write in, I do 10 milligrams when I wake up every day. Congratulations. You're the rodeo master of weed. For most people, 10 milligrams will get you fucked up.
And those gummies that you saw me taking when we were camping that I take pretty often, those are 5 milligrams. They change my mood. For other people, I've given them to people and they get really fucked up. I've given them to people and they feel nothing at all. So that's my 5. So this was double that. And so I went up to the bartender and was just asking some questions like about their dosage. I was like, is this the only dosage that you have? And she told me she has absolutely no idea what these things mean. She asked me, do you know the difference between the C1 and the T1? And I said, okay, yeah, the C1, like think C for calm. So if people, like if you have someone who's too drunk, I would give them the one with just the C, no T, because T can make people crazy. But I warned her, like 10 milligrams of this, like this is pretty serious. And I'm going to try this out. We'll see, you know, if it affects me. And it did. I ended up at Whole Foods buying myself a pie. It was a good pie. But these bartenders did not have information. So even if I wanted to educate myself in the moment at that bar, being like, I'm going to drink this thing, the people serving it to me didn't have the information. Well,
that's, and that's the other problem with this in terms of the patchwork legalization is that a lot of states, up to and including the great state of Texas, where we are broadcasting from right now, have essentially held on to the idea that they were not going to legalize it to the point where loopholes have broken through because there's such a demand.
You can thank Thomas Massie for that, by the way. You can get edibles in Texas. That's, yeah. Thomas Massie put in the last farm bill a provision for hemp.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the way, as I understand it, the way that works is you can't, it is illegal to remove THC from hemp above a certain threshold, but there's nothing to stop you from taking a hemp that has a low threshold of THC and then just adding it all together.
Yeah,
that's fine. And so you can now get like, edibles legally. And
so now they're at every gas station in Austin, mm-hmm. and there are little roadside shops that sell edibles, and they will get you fucked up.
Will they? Because yes. I haven't tried them.
I'll give you some. I have some in the room. I'll give you some on the way out. A little party favor.
Something that I think would be very helpful.
They taste like a bag of grass, and you have to eat a lot more of them than you would real weed.
Yeah. Well, and I don't understand what Delta 9 is, because that's the fake weed, right? And like, I don't understand
Delta
the 8 difference.
And Delta 9 and then THCA. Yeah, like, it's all essentially like, basically take it back to when, before all weed became good. This is for all the 80s swag babies out there. Yeah. Like, so it's like you had to smoke a lot more to get you high. And then all of a sudden somebody was like, oh, here's some like, you know, dank super nugs. And it was like what we now just know as regular ass weed. But it THCA, Delta 9, you just basically take the proportions back to the old version. You just have to smoke more, eat a little bit more, but it'll get you fucked up. And I'll say this, the Delta 9 stuff that I got stuck with me. I had more of like a weed hangover with it than I have with other stuff when I take it.
I liked these better than booze drinks. I mean, they were great. I felt something. I had no hangover the next day. They were great. Like I feel, so just to like clarify my position on this, I do feel like alcohol, had I gotten more information when I was younger, I do think it would have made a difference in my life. But I'm not saying, you know, alcohol's legal. It is what it is. I'm not pushing for licensure of that. But as we are making these rules for marijuana, and based on my own experience and what I've witnessed, you know, this Tennessee thing was eye-opening. The fact that these bartenders didn't fucking know anything was scary to me. I do think that we're going to have to put some kind of information structure in for this. Because alcohol, most likely your parents have tried it. Most likely everyone around you has tried it. There are plenty of people that have absolutely no idea what's going on with CBD.
I would love, and in our old stomping grounds of the Bay Area, there was a gigantic public policy promotion about overdosing on fentanyl. And it was like all these cool kids and they're all hanging out. And it's like, don't OD, be okay. Like, make sure you get a thing that you, the Pulp Fiction needle that you would stab in your friend's chest in case they OD. And it's like this cool hip club where everybody's hanging out. It's like, that's not where the ODs are happening. What I think would have actually been more beneficial is if they did a similar campaign like that for edible dosage, because people, especially Vegas is another place where they should have that when you get into your hotel room, because you have these people coming in from all over the world and they're getting ferried from dispensary to dispensary by the cab companies who get a kickback, and they get these super high dose edibles.
Yeah.
Our friend Jacob Smith from Ice Cream Social, who works at Absinthe, said he is never, and he's worked in theater in Vegas for a long time, when it was just the booze, you'd have somebody, maybe they throw up, maybe they fall asleep, something like that. the like scary fall over, crack their head, the kind of stuff. It only started when weed got legal. Mm. Like people getting too fucked up on edibles is a major, major problem. And that if we're understandably, this is something that weed advocates have called for a very long time. I'm in favor of moving it to Schedule 3, but let's stop putting our head in the sand on this. We do need some kind of federal understanding of what these are. And we should, even if it means, I don't know if a license is going to happen, but if there's just more public information out there on, you know, I don't know, some kind of rhyming scheme to let you know, like, what is my weight divided by the milligrams that I should start with when I do edibles, instead of people thinking that they're Superman and being like, it says 100. And then,
but this is why I like
they're on Mars and they're separated from reality. They're in the shadow realm for like a day and a half.
Yeah. But this is why I like the licensure idea. So it's someone you have to sit down, you can ask those questions. It's with a medical professional. And because 38 states have already set up this medical system, even in California, it's recreational now, but most of us did have to go through this process of getting the license. Now, some of them were easier to get than others. You could go to Venice Beach, like hand a guy $50 and like, it's done. Yeah. But if we made this a more formalized process, knowing that in 38 states, it's kind of already there. Like, I feel like we could take this structure that is halfway already existing and make it a one-time class. Like, would you be more comfortable if it was you have to take like a half hour class just to get the information, then you have this permission forever?
I think that's the fastest way to just reinvigorate the black market, is to put too high of a barrier there.
But that's if it's free, again,
I'm in agreement with both of you on information about this is good. This is something like the country's had since our founding to contend with alcohol. So while there's better and better advancements in terms of what alcohol does, people, there's a general idea of how it affects you. I'm not in disagreement on the information side of this. I don't like have a visceral reaction to having licensing for marijuana because it's so much better than the alternative that we've had for the last 50 years. Like this is an incredible win. I don't think that there would be a one-time license. I just don't see that happening with government. If you could make that happen, great.
I already did. That's how I got mine in California.
There's just one time?
No.
Yeah,
it was a medical license that you had to renew.
Because
you had to renew. To pay $50, exactly. But I didn't have to have the meeting every year.
No.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think like that will become yet another like syntax in effect. I don't think that's ever going to go away. I'm viewing this right now as a win. The thing that I think would be most helpful from a governmental perspective at the moment is somebody needs to develop a test for if you're on the influence of marijuana while you're driving.
Can't do that. Because it stays in your body for so long.
I know. That's why we don't have one. And I'm like, it would be good if you could develop a test that had that kind of thing. I think that that's an impediment at the state level for one of the actual legitimate things that I think state governments have a problem with marijuana, which I'm very much in favor of legalizing, is, hey, with alcohol, we can do a blood test immediately on somebody. With marijuana, as you point out, Jen, it stays in your system so long that there's no way to do it. So we have to rely on fairly anecdotal, subjective police analysis of if the person is under the influence or not. That's tough. Like that's, I think, a legitimate safety issue. So from a governmental perspective, that's in my mind where I'd like stuff to go.
Well, and I know when I worked in restaurants and I was serving alcohol as a waitress, I had to, most of the time it was like an online class, but I had to be educated about alcohol and spotting people's limits and knowing when not to overserve and have that information. I think it is absolutely non-negotiable that people that are serving
green light,
these,
yellow light, red light.
Yeah, like people that, because I think about the Tennessee example. Joe and I knew what we were getting into, so we had one drink.
Yeah.
Had we gone drink for drink, knowing that it takes 45 minutes to kick in, we easily could have killed three of them, I don't know, and been completely fucked up. Yeah, I would have been really fucked up and it could have been really scary. And the fact that the bartenders didn't know, like, that is something, because I'm excited about this because marijuana helps me. It helps me a lot. I'm afraid we're going to do this in a stupid way and we're going to lose it because there will be people that have these very scary experiences.
There are real problems with high dose edibles.
Yeah, like they're terrifying.
And it goes beyond what LSD. Like there are
the
issues.
Only scary drug trip I've ever had was edibles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there are for real problems when you get to a certain level, and I do think that we need to be heads up about it. We won't, but I think it'd be cool if we did.
Yeah, and there's certain things that just aren't helping that, like. Like, I love Joey Diaz. I think he's a hilarious comedian, but he talks about, you know, slamming down 1,000 milligram brownie in one night. And people think that's awesome. And like,
that sounds fucking terrifying. Like awful. I did, like, again, like the one time I've had like a like scary, maybe I should go to the, didn't, but like, should I go to the hospital kind of thing, was on edibles. And it was probably very low is my guess. Like, they melted and I didn't realize THC was a free floating particle.
Yeah. Everybody that I've ever known that has gotten into edibles, that have smoked weed, there's a learning curve to it. Mm-hmm. And I always try, and this is one of my old sawhorses, but I'm against edibles being in snack foods. Mm. I don't think that edibles should be in like a cookie, because you've never looked at a cookie or a candy bar and said, I only eat one little crumb.
Yeah.
You always think of a cookie or a candy bar and you say, I want to eat all of it.
When you
and that's like 1,000 milligrams. It's like 100, you know, one candy bar will be like 200 milligrams and you're supposed to eat one little piece of chocolate. But that's not how we've been conditioned our entire lives. And you're just incentivizing people to get way too fucked up.
I saw Joe taking like a nibble off of a gummy. I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, the whole gummy should be 2.5 milligrams. And instead you have to take like a tiny piece of this 20 milligram thing.
Yeah.
It's the dosing. There's so little education about it. And Justin, it sounds like you and I are pretty educated on it and we still have questions. So it's newbies. I don't know how they're supposed to handle this.
I'm on your side, listener. I want you to have a good, edibles are fun and great for the most of the family, except for Heaton, apparently.
5 milligrams is perfect for me. That's my favorite.
5 milligrams is aggressive for first timers. I would say start with 2.5 and just see how it feels. Mm-hmm. And then go from there.
Yeah. A couple other things. Like, we're all in agreement. People need to be more educated on this. If we could do it in a way that is effective and minimally restrictive, I would be in favor of it. My main thing with all of this is a welcome development. This is good that we've moved away from Schedule One. We shouldn't think of marijuana like heroin. That's ridiculous. We shouldn't think of LSD like heroin. Like, nothing should be in Schedule One that can't kill you.
It can make you fat.
Yeah. there's good things like, I think you're going to see an economic boom in marijuana, because it's going to become a lot easier now to do stuff across state lines. Because if you're going, I don't know all of the mechanics of this, but if one would assume, broadly speaking, if you're operating in the medical marijuana industry, which is the predominant one in one state, the now federal laws are going to be much less restrictive between states, which means you can have more interstate commerce.
Well, I think it's already happening, because these gummies that I love, I always get them in California. Mm-hmm. And was under the assumption that's the only place I could get them. And now Instagram is advertising that I can get them here in Texas, where it's not even legal.
And you'll be able to get more investment if you're looking to do this stuff. And then like some other really good things are going to come out of this too, aside from the consumer part of this, which is I think what we've been focused on so far. It's going to be a lot easier to do research on medical marijuana right now. At the moment, as of now, as I talk, the only federally approved source of clinical grade marijuana in the entire country is at the University of Mississippi's Institute for Drug Addiction, Institute for Drug Addiction and Abuse. So there's one place in the whole country, the University of Mississippi, where you can get clinical grade marijuana, and it's at an institute that was created to show why marijuana is bad. So in order to get that, you have to fill out research papers explaining how you're going to further their goal of showing that marijuana is bad. Otherwise, they're not going to give it to you. It's a really dumb way to conduct any type of research on this.
Yeah.
Now that this is being moved from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, it's going to be way, way, way easier for pharmaceutical companies to start working on research that's more ubiquitous and available to people for seizures or glaucoma, all of those things that we already kind of know about, but we've been hamstrung on. And then the final bit that I think is in conjunction with that is my guess. I don't know the ins and outs of this, but my guess is right now, if you've got glaucoma, it's probably a pretty big struggle for you to get your health insurance company to give you marijuana on that, because the health insurance company probably doesn't want to run afoul of federal law. The fact that this is now being scheduled in Schedule 3 means that the insurance companies are going to have a lot more wiggle room to get you stuff that could be potentially helpful for you. So this is all going to be very beneficial.
That's great for my, I don't have weeds disease. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. Spark 'em. One weird trick to mainstream ranked choice voting writes, I don't know if you caught this, but Sir Heaton's favorite topic hit the mainstream last week. Ranked choice voting was the way the winner was decided in the latest Mr. Beast video. The final five had to decide who would win the $250,000 of those remaining five contestants, or no one would win. One of them said we should just do ranked choice voting. After a quick 15-second explanation, the votes decided who won.
Who's Mr. Beast? Because several people sent this to me of like, hey, Mr. Beast, like you should be friends with Mr. Beast. He likes ranked choice voting. And I was like, oh, yeah, have him call me. Like who is this guy?
Mr. Beast is probably the most popular YouTuber.
OK,
but he doesn't do a lot of videos. But when he does, he has leaned into gigantic event kind of stuff. So he has cured. He spent a bunch of money. He'll spend like millions of dollars on these one videos. But he like cured people's blindness in one of them. He did a real life Squid Game in another one of them. Like there was, and this is before they did the actual Netflix reality show for it. So he does these big kind of event videos. Like one of them was like he stayed in the most expensive hotel in the world and then stayed in the cheapest hotel in the world. I don't know.
Okay, cool.
People doing things.
Oh, geez, sounds fun. I'll check him
look
out.
At this. They did ranked choice
voting. Well done on disseminating ranked choice voting, Mr. Beast.
A very drunk emailer writes, before I ever saw Jen, I thought she sounded like Jen Psaki, so I unfairly treated her like Psaki. I'm sorry, Jen.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the apology.
Heaton got me laid.
Yeah.
Writes, I was recently on a first date with a law student.
And strikes again.
Naturally, the topic of the Supreme Court's legitimacy came up as a topic of conversation. Being a longtime listener of The Orphanage, I brought up living constitutionalism and originalism with their conflation with left and right ideology. She was impressed with my knowledge of jurisprudence and promptly asked if she could have a tour of my apartment once we left dinner. The tour proceeded as one would expect, giving the subject line of this email, chicks dig jurisprudence.
This is the best message I've ever received on this program. I cannot tell you how filled with joy I am that Judge Week got you laid.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And if ever there were a sterling endorsement of the political orphanage, this is it.
If you get married, Heaton gets prima noctem.
Mm-hmm.
A Gen Z voter who will not vote writes, this is all on TikTok, by the way. I seriously doubt any of my friends will vote either. From my experience, my peers are roughly 10% care about something and vote. 10% vote how their parents vote, usually those still living at home. And 80%, it's rigged, dumb, vote doesn't count, waste of time, not worth taking time off or using a day off. No idea how to address a letter, even though you just have to put it back in the mail. But now that Trump is a certified no-cap Rizzler, that may change depending on how bussing his ratio is on Joe during the debate. Just kidding, we're not going to vote.
Can you decode that for me?
Yeah, I don't speak
no cap Rizzler. I feel like I've aged 10 years today, just like between Mr. Beast. What is a no cap Rizzler and what is bussing ratio?
You have to explain to both of us.
Bussing ratio. Bussing ratio is what Kamala Harris slammed Joe Biden on in that debate. Just kidding. It's not. So a certified no cap Rizzler. No cap. Cap is lying.
Okay.
Or inauthenticity. Uh-huh. So if you're no cap, then you are authentic.
Your
Rizzler is similar, but lie. It's cap is authenticity, not authenticity. Based is like you are an awesome dude. Like that's what that is.
Yeah.
Rizzler is a derivative of Riz, which is a derivative of charisma. Ah. So if you've got Riz, you've got charisma. And if you're a Rizzler, then you are one with charisma.
That is a fascinating etymological evolution happening right before our eyes. We're seeing the development of language.
Yes,
fascinating.
Yes.
Development or development?
Bussing.
Wait, so if he says that Trump is a certified no cap Rizzler, does that mean he's an
authentic man with charisma? Yes.
Depending on how bussing his ratio, like I can't.
Okay, so bussing.
Put this in a normal sentence for me.
Now that Trump is a authentic, charismatic guy to my cohort, that may change depending on how much he destroys Joe Biden in the debate. I'm kidding. We're not going to vote.
Okay. Well, you have to.
So like a ratio is a Twitter term where your tweet has more replies than likes. If there's a ratio of like 3 to 1 in terms of replies than likes, then that means that people are yelling at you more than supporting you.
Yeah.
So you have gotten ratioed,
gotcha.
Right? And so if your ratio is bussing, then holy shit, have you just dunked on your opponent?
How do you know this?
I don't know. Banhammer writes, the TikTok ban bill is an exercise of Congress's power to regulate foreign trade, with it, which is essentially unlimited. They can completely ban trade if they want, e.g. sanctions, and they can do the lesser included stuff, like saying you can't do business with social media companies from designated countries. I'm pretty sure they could also just say no business with this particular company, since foreign companies don't have constitutional rights and we can sanction individual entities.
I apologize that I wasn't listening to a word of that because I was still focusing on that. You were still focusing on whether or not.
Am I a no cap Rizzler? Like, how bussin' have been my ratios?
Yeah, like, how have I never heard these words before? How old am I? Like, all these thoughts of like, am I a grandma? But Justin knows why. Like, there was, I was down a real rabbit hole.
I just have a connection with the youth. Mm-hmm. They love me. I'm a no cap Rizzler.
Whereas I feel like I've always been 42. Just always.
You were 42 when you were 16.
Yeah. I like very like, yeah, I'm just a skinnier version of me. Listener, I think you are correct about Congress's ability to regulate foreign trade. I don't think that that will apply so much if this gets challenged in court, because the question is not so much what they do with the parent company in China, but rather what happens with the American subsidiary here in the States, which I think would be challenged on First Amendment grounds. I think it would probably boil down to whether or not, whether or not the courts look to the effect or the just the technical execution. If they look to the effect and go, well, the effect of this is it's banned, then I think that they will probably not allow that ban to occur.
By the way, New York Times reporting that happened since we recorded last week says that the verbiage of the bill that passed had been being worked on for a year and was done in concert with the Department of Justice. So the Department of Justice believes that they can enforce this on a First Amendment challenge.
Hmm. I mean, that's why, I mean, the way they did it is clever. It really is.
And apparently they ran, all of this started after that first big TikTok hearing. They went stealth for a year, bipartisan, because they didn't want TikTok's lobbyists to catch wind of it. They wanted them to be flat-footed, which they were. And then, you know, TikTok panicked, told all of their users to call their congresspeople immediately, built it into the app. The congresspeople that were like no's became yeses because they had screeching tweens, you know, ripping through their phone lines. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. The politician's dream, two roles at the same time, writes, I live in Philly, and State Assemblyman Malcolm Kenyatta was running for a statewide primary for Auditor General while at the same time running in the primary for his seat in the General Assembly. He won both races. How is this possible? How is this legal? What happens now? Will he now run in both general elections and pick the seats he wants?
It does seem weird that you can run for two things at the same time.
Huey Long was a governor and a senator simultaneously. Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Huey P. Long, the kingpin of Louisiana.
I was going to say Louisiana's fucked up. On Women's Pain, Funny Girl writes, Barbara Streisand came to speak at the National Institute of Health while I was working there. Apparently, she gave NIH a bunch of money to specifically improve health research for women. And NIH already gets so much money, so that means something. I learned at the presentation that researchers from the early days of NIH only used to use male lab rats because they didn't want to have to factor in the mammalian reproductive cycle. You know, that damn thing that all women have. Then when drugs and therapeutics only ever get tested on male mice, get into human trials, the participation of men consistently eclipsed any meaningful representation of women.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Numbers Don't Lie writes, the pain scale used by doctors is supposed to be a subjective since some are able to deal with pain more than others. What seems to be the problems with the implementation of the scale is the lack of explanation to the patient that is their pain at all, or at least a one. If you are having your leg amputated without anesthetic, that's supposed to be a 10. If the pain is bad enough to affect your daily activities and cause you to seek medical attention, that should be understood as at least a 4. All of this takes time. Time is not a luxury that doctor who bills insurance and Medicare, Medicaid has. Much of their time is spent making sure that their charting is correct to receive the right amount of money from these awful bureaucratic entities. That seems great.
Yep.
see something, say something writes, I'd encourage anyone who has a bad experience with a doctor or facility to file a complaint with your insurance. The best way to encourage change is to make it more profitable to do things your way. And these complaints are indeed tracked. If there's enough of them, they can influence the facility's pay rates when contract negotiations come around.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a lot of the time when we're beating our heads against something, it's like, well, maybe we can convince enough members of Congress to do a meaningful change in this particular policy. This seems much more likely and much more efficacious.
I'm a big fan of writing a polite but strongly worded letter.
Sternly worded letter?
Yeah. They're my masterpieces. I love them.
And they say that white people don't have culture.
Well, here's the thing. I do it both ways.
To black people too?
Okay, fuck them. I will write when I have a complaint. But when someone does go above and beyond, yeah, I also write the letter. Good. Yeah. And it makes a big difference on both.
I will say, especially in restaurants, and I know that you've also been a service industry person, always helps.
Yeah.
One person who goes to the manager on the way out and just says, hey, they're great. That can affect shifts for like a year going forward. One person being nice.
Yep.
Pills, baby, writes, not sure if you're aware, but they introduced the pain scale to which you referred in the latest episode as a requirement for physicians in 2001. This was mainly due to Purdue Pharma's desire to increase sales of OxyContin, which at the time was, of course, purported to be safe and non-addictive, a claim, of course, later proven to be objectively false. Good to know.
That's fun.
A tale of a high school girl who got off the pill after it made her crazy, writes, she came off the pill in senior year of high school and her entire ability to think changed, happier, much more emotionally stable, but it also made her suddenly realize that she didn't like her boyfriend at the time. Not only did she realize that he was kind of a whiny loser, but he smelled different and she had lost all attraction to him.
Well, I'm glad she broke up with Matt Gaetz. I think that was probably a good strategy for her, and I'm glad she was on the pill while banging him.
Yeah, this one is really fascinating to me because Joe smelled different after I went off the pill.
Really?
And I never actually put that together. I just figured he was drinking more water. Luckily, it went in like the right direction where I like to smell more. But I've never heard anyone else say that before. So for her to say that, I was like, oh, my God. Like, that rings true to me.
I hate Joe's smell. If I start taking birth control pills, will he be more palatable in my presence?
Just ask him to put his shoes back on. Okay. I think it'll solve it all.
There is a fascinating world of women's sense of smell.
Yeah.
Like women's sense of smell and wherever that crosses the line with like pheromones, like there is just a full understanding that I think boys quite simply have no clue about.
Yeah.
Like the only time that I think of smells are like when food is cooking. And I'm like, whoa, that smells
good. I've got a horrible, I've had allergies my whole life. I had really bad allergies when I was a kid. So I think my brain literally went, don't bother building these neurons. And so yeah. I have a very muted sense of smell. I can pretty much just smell Joe.
Finally, Dr. Death writes, the three of you spent half a show regaling us with anecdotes about how some doctor misinformed, misaligned, and misdiagnosed one of you. And Heat Kevorkian over here wants to give the profession legal cover for medical assisted suicide.
I don't think my doctor's did anything wrong in those stories.
No, he's dunking on Heaton.
Yeah.
Sorry, wait. He's trying to levy a busing ratio on Heaton.
That's right. Well, let me, hold on. Cap a Rizzler.
Come on, Rizz us.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm not going to Rizz it up. I think with a lot of these assisted suicide arguments, they end up being values arguments, which is fine. So a lot of the time when we're having discussions on the show, we're talking about practical impact in terms of like political economy. How is this going to manifest? We're going with an outcome-based argument, which is I like. I like to live there. Occasionally, we just get into values-based stuff. We're really just talking about values. And I do really hold the primacy of an individual over their own life, even if they do things that I don't like. And that means that I'm probably going to err towards physician-assisted suicide.
On that note, We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is Will Saddleberg. If you want to email us, head on over to werenotwrongpod@gmail.com on PX3. This week, we have Tom LoBianco, formerly of The Messenger and USA Today. He wrote a book about Mike Pence. And so we had him on to discuss essentially the fall of the pro-life movement in the Republican coalition. So that is on PX3 this Wednesday. Jen.
I don't know. Congress did a lot, like a lot over the course of a week.
They did.
And it's
very out of place for them.
Well, they just did everything that they were supposed to do over the course of 2 years in the course of 6 weeks. And this last week was kind of unexpected. So I just don't even know where to fucking start. But I wanted to ask you guys, since you're a fan of my show, I did something weird, which was I knew I was flying on a Boeing to Nashville.
Yep.
So on my way to Nashville on the Boeing, I listened to the whistleblowers hearing.
Gotcha.
About Boeing's like possibility of falling out of the sky. And it was a fascinating hearing. So I'm thinking about just chopping it up and throwing it out there. Is that something that you think would be
interesting? No, the answer to everything for you is yes. More. Just do more. If you like it, then your audience will like it.
Plus, like, I like I as a dish head would love stories that are directly related to my life. So I am fascinated. I'm obviously fascinated by how Congress works and how systems work and big abstract pictures. I very much like that. But I also enjoy is this going to affect me personally? And like that kind of thing. I don't want to get sucked out of an airplane door.
Yeah.
That has a visceral traction with me.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I felt the same way. I made a joke on the plane that I thought might upset someone because I said it like louder than I intended, but I was on a 737 Max, you know, the one that crashed a few times, but on Southwest, they now have phone chargers. And so I said to Joe, I was like, well, at least our phones will be full when we crash and die. And the lady next to him, like, audibly cackled. She goes, that's really fucked up to say on a plane. I was like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, luckily she was a good sport
We were flying back from Ohio and Ashley, you know, she's pregnant, so she needs more space. And she's like, oh, can we go sit Southwest, right? So you get to pick your own seats. Can we go sit in the exit row? And I'm like, of course. Yeah. Let's go to the exit row. And then we sit down and I'm like, oh fuck, we're on a Boeing. This is like the only place we don't want to be.
Get away from the door.
Yeah. I'm like, that's the shit that falls out.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. I plan my seat. Like I know because of the one of the Southwest problems was when the piece got loose in the engine and flew through the window. That was aisle 14. And so I sit in the back. I also know that just like statistically, if the plane goes down, the further you are to the back, the more likely you are to sit to survive. So I think of this stuff all the time, but I do think that's kind of a weird thing to do, to listen to that hearing on the plane. And I like loved it.
You're fucking weird.
I know.
You're weird.
I know.
Do you remember there was a meme that was going around for a while where like the reason that the airline wants you to lean forward, you know, brace, lean forward is because they want to have the seat hit your head and snap it so that when you burn up on entry, they can't identify it was this weird fucked up thing. I'm like, they have a list of all the names. Like, but there was this conspiracy theory for a while that the airlines, if they had a crash, were going to try to like get rid of the evidence so that they couldn't. And it's like, dude, there's a list of people. Like, yeah.
What's up in the orphanage?
We are talking about the myriad and colorful protests that are occurring on American campuses, particularly in the Ivy League, Columbia and NYU. My dear friend, Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy, is a former professor. They were a professor up until about a year ago at NYU, and so has some skin in the game on this. And our friend Michael Ira Kaplan, that we regularly talk with, has thoughts. So we have a conversation about the nature of college protests.
Well, I'm glad those kids finally get some attention.
Yeah.
For Andrew Heaton and Jennifer Briney, I'm Justin Robert Young, and take to your grave that we're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.